Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Doctor podcast. This is Robert, and tonight I'm very pleased to have with me someone who's kind of become the go-to man for iOS 5, it looks like, Mr. Kevin Chow. And Kevin, thanks for being here tonight on the Tech Doctor podcast.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm glad that I became the iOS 5 go-to person and very glad to share a lot of the really cool things with iOS 5 in regards to voiceover accessibility and many other aspects of iOS 5.
Well, I have known you for quite a few years. We've done some beta testing on different things together, and I know that you are a person who absolutely can sniff out a bug from 50 miles away and knows how to report that bug and knows how to be an activist for getting people to actually work on those bugs. So I know you've been involved with iOS 5 as part of the beta program, and I'm sure you got to see it develop and mature, and so you have a perspective that I don't have because I didn't do the developer program. So I'm looking forward to you sharing your experienced base with iOS 5 than what I have. I've been using it for, well, almost a week now. I guess it came out a week ago tomorrow, so that's been my experience with it. So we're going to cover a lot of things that are changed. I think you mentioned actually in a list of changes that you published, there are 75 or 80 new things in iOS 5, maybe even more. And so we're gonna talk through some of those at least in this podcast, as well as touch on the iPhone 4S, which we're both very fortunate to have one. I guess we both got them last Friday. I got mine on Friday.
Yeah, I got mine Friday morning as well. Yeah, I've been using iOS 5 during the beta development cycle I've been using it for the past 4.5 months now. So it's been very exciting to see it kind of go from the initial public, somewhat closed beta unveiling and just absolutely just mature, and Apple being very, very receptive to feedback, both actual bug reports and feature requests, enhancements, all that stuff, and just watching that thing actually just progress very, very well, both iOS 5 in general and the accessibility things.
Well, that is really exciting, and of course, you're saying that is tempting me seriously to want to get into the developer program, and I might do it for the next cycle. I use my phone so much that I've been a little reluctant to want to put beta software on it, but you're whetting my appetite here. I may have to do that next time. I enjoy testing these things. And it is very exciting to watch it develop.
It definitely is. And I'll be honest, I didn't, for the first few betas of iOS 5, just because it's such a major and radical change, I actually wasn't willing to run it on my iPhone 4 at the time. I'm fortunate enough to have an iPad 2, so I kind of use that as my test device.
Yeah. Well, my wife just gave up her iPhone 3GS, and she's got my old iPhone 4, so I might be able to come up with some device. Who knows? Anyway, that's perhaps a topic for another time. Let's just kind of go through some of this here and talk a little bit about these features. And the first one that I wanted to mention was this out-of-the-box triple-click home to start VoiceOver, and that's a really exciting feature because someone can buy an iOS device, take it home, take it out of the box, triple click home, and VoiceOver will start, and they can then set up the device. There is a gotcha, though, unfortunately, that we all discovered on Friday, which is if someone like the guy at the AT&T store has already gone through the setup screens on the phone, triple click home doesn't start VoiceOver. You have to go in and start it the old-fashioned way from settings, general accessibility, and then VoiceOver, and turn it on, and then you can set up the triple-click home. But I was a little surprised by that, and I guess a bit disappointed. How about you?
Yeah, I was quite surprised as well because I have been running iOS 5 both on the iPad 2 and iPhone 4, and from the minute I hit restore to get iOS 5 on there, I was able to do the triple click home, so I really thought the experience would be similar to what we have like on the Mac side, where you can walk up to any Mac and press Command F5 and use it. So I really thought the experience would be like that, but it turns out that, like you said, Robert, that unless it's a one actually grabs the device right out of the box and triple click home, from that point forward, yes, VoiceOver will work and triple click home would be set to VoiceOver. And the second option would be is if one wasn't aware of the triple click home, if a person waited somewhere in the neighborhood of a minute and a half to 2.5 minutes, VoiceOver would actually come on by itself. So under those two conditions, you would have the out-of-the-box experience, but in most situations where you either get it at an Apple store, AT&T store, a Verizon store, whatever, whoever your carrier or the store you decide to get your iPhone 4S or any of your iOS 5 device from, most of the time they're going to actually go ahead and set it up for you, and in that case you're actually still going to be back at square one where you're going to have to ask someone to enable VoiceOver for you. So there is that to be aware of, definitely.
Right. Perhaps Apple will rethink that idea. They've got the same situation going as sort of as an aside with the Apple TV now. You can triple-click the play button at setup time, but if it's already been set up, that doesn't work. That is to toggle VoiceOver.
That's actually been the case even pre-iOS 5, though. That's with the – there was an update after – what was it? After 4.1, I believe 4.2 allowed that functionality. Right at the setup screen, you can do a triple click – what was it? The menu button, actually. The bottom left button. That would enable VoiceOver.
Yeah, I saw that there was a rumor that it would – enable or disable VoiceOver from anywhere in the Apple TV, but it's only during setup, similar to the way it's working on the other iOS devices. So anyway, we'll see what Apple does with that. It is really a great thing that they've given people a way to use the device right out of the box and get it going. That's really cool. But I'd like people to be able to walk into an Apple store and, you know, triple click home on an iPhone that's already set up and working, and VoiceOver would always start up. So that's kind of what I was hoping would happen.
I was hoping for that, as well as, I mean, even the possibility of if someone's on the fence about an iOS 5 device. I mean, at the moment, it's going to be pretty much any product that's running iOS 5, but the ability to go to a store and to kind of check it out and see what it's all about, like anyone else is able to.
Absolutely.
Without having to chase down a representative and say, well, can you just turn on VoiceOver real quick and this is how you do it?
Absolutely. Well, the good news is that if you do buy an iOS device and you do triple click home and get it turned on and you're the first person to touch it, the setup screens that you need to go through to set up your device work just beautifully with VoiceOver. So there's no problem. If you get VoiceOver on, there's no problem with setting up the device.
Oh, yeah, the setup screen is absolutely just beautiful. It's actually quite nice. And the first screen, I kind of like how they did this, because the first screen displays a globe of kind of, and it transitions among all these different kind of languages and countries and so forth. And they brought that experience to VoiceOver even. So it's really these kind of nice small details. So, for example, if you touch the slide to setup thing on the bottom.
Yeah.
Depending on when you touch it, it will speak a VoiceOver will speak in a different language.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that. Well, you know, this kind of leads us into the whole one of the main features of iOS 5 is that with Apple's new iCloud product, it sort of frees one up from their PC or their Mac. If you have stored your backup information in iCloud, you don't even have to have a PC or a Mac to connect your iOS device to get it set up. So really it makes that setup screen all the more important, because you can just do it without having to connect anything. And that's pretty exciting.
It definitely is. I mean, it brings the whole experience of PC, Mac free, and not the need for iTunes. And I know people in general aren't the biggest fan of iTunes, and just the idea of having to connect to do backups. And it also helps in the area of being on the latest iOS version. I think just the whole idea of connecting to iTunes, it's an extra hassle that I don't it's nice that it's kind of moved away from that point and you're able to do everything from the device, and now it's a standalone unit. And with the whole iCloud thing, the way that works is pretty much equivalent to what people used to have on iTunes, where you can do a backup, and it's a full backup. So all your settings, all your personalized data that you have within apps, your voiceover settings, your triple click home set to voiceover, everything that you can think of, including your mail, your contacts, and all that, that will be backed up to iCloud. And there's a fair amount of configuration that you can actually do within settings, iCloud. But for the most part, you can accept the defaults, and it's pretty smart about it. And the conditions it would actually back up is, by default, is if you're connected to Wi-Fi and to the power, it would back up once a day. But if one wishes to do a manual or force backup, that can be done under settings, iCloud, and then backup.
Yes, and that will back up to iCloud. And you can also plug your device into your Mac or your PC and go to iTunes and do a right-click and choose backup, and it will back up to your computer. So you're not actually losing the ability to do that by backing up to iCloud. You're just really gaining a great deal of convenience there.
Yeah, and I think for most people, this would ensure that they have a proper backup and that an easier way to update to the latest iOS version when future versions do come out. So I think that's very nice.
Right, and that's another component that you're kind of mentioning there of iCloud, really, of this new service, is that Apple is going to start pushing out updates to iOS wirelessly, and so there's not even going to be a need to connect your device to keep up to date with the latest iOS version.
Yeah, and they're calling that pretty much over-the-air updates. And right. Another really cool aspect to iCloud is if you have multiple iOS devices, or even with your Mac and your Windows computer and so forth, it's able to synchronize things just across multiple devices right away. So let's say if you add a contact, or if you install a new app, or you modify a contact and so forth, the second that happens, it's just pushed across to all your other devices, and it's just synchronized just very, very seamlessly.
Yes, I made a change to one of my contacts yesterday in my address book on my Mac, and within a couple of minutes, that change had also been made on my iPhone without me doing anything. So that's really a big step forward for those of us who have more than one device that we're using. We can count on them being updated, in staying in sync, being updated, you know, together. I guess I should point out that you do need to be running Lion to use iCloud in that way, or to have it work that way on the Macs. My wife's still got Snow Leopard. She's a little frustrated that her calendars, you know, won't sync in this way between her iPad and her iPhone and her Mac. But I guess I'm going to have to break down and update her to Lion pretty soon.
Yeah, and it also works on Windows if you get the iCloud control panel. So they're supporting all these different platforms, including not one that's not their own. So that's very good. Another aspect, too, is even if one has the iWork productivity suite, currently it only works on the iOS devices. But in my case, where I have an iPad 2 and iPhone, I can make a change or create a document on one, either the iPad or iPhone, and it just updates right over to the other device. That's very nice.
Yeah, and I know, so I've heard a few people say that they are kind of reluctant to trust the cloud. And of course, Apple even themselves have made fun of themselves about their lack of ability to do a really great online syncing system like iCloud. Of course, they're saying iCloud, they learned a lot from their Mobile Me mistakes, and they're going to do it right this time. Do you have any reservations in any issues with trusting iCloud at this point?
I mean, given their past history and stuff like that, it would be reasonable that I would, but I actually don't really. I mean, this is their third go-around. The first they started off, actually the third or fourth. I mean, they had iTool, and they had .Mac and Mobile Me and stuff like that. So I definitely do think they learned, as well as them having a dedicated kind of data farm or server in North Carolina. The fact that they understand that they need to really dedicate a lot of resources towards it. And I've been using iCloud exclusively since the first opportunity arose during the beta, and I've been relying on that as my primary backup, and it's worked flawlessly.
Yeah, so that's pretty good testimonial for iCloud, I think. Is there anything else that you can think of off the top of your head that you want to be sure and say about iCloud before we move on, or have we kind of covered the highlights?
I think that we definitely have covered the highlights, and for the most part, if there are to really have a good understanding of iCloud, I mean, of course, one can go to the web and stuff like that, but I would really encourage people to have a look at settings and iCloud. It really is quite self-explanatory as far as it will specify things such as apps and ringtones and stuff like that don't count against your storage quota, and what actually does and what doesn't, and how you can configure what gets backed up and what doesn't. So I would just have a peruse through the iCloud settings.
Yeah, it is pretty easy to understand, and also, you know, to realize that your big GPS app, if you have one, for example, is not going to be backed up. It's going to be indexed, but they're not going to back up all of that GPS app with those gigs of data, because you only get 5 gigs free with iCloud. You can buy more, but typically, I think for almost anyone, the backup that's done is going to likely fit within less than that 5 gig model that they're offering.
And I guess one more thing to note with that is, in regards to your iCloud data, it's not per device. So let's say, in my case, where I have an iPad and an iPhone, and I'm using the same Apple ID, it's 5 gigs in total. And it really, I'm only using about half a gig, so there's plenty of, and I have tons of app and tons of data and settings, so.
Yeah, and you can synchronize all kinds of things, like photos and mail and other things. I'm not doing all that with iCloud. I'm basically backing up my data and my contacts and the things that I really use on a regular basis. But at any rate, it's very exciting about iCloud. There's going to be more coming. There's going to be a music service, Music Match. It's going to be out later this month. And so this is definitely something that Apple is in the beginning stages of growing and developing. And I think we're going to see a lot of exciting stuff with iCloud coming down the pike. But let's move on to one of my favorite iOS features, which is the new Notification Center. And if people remember in earlier versions of iOS, when you would get a something pushed to your phone, like a text message, you would get a pop-up that would pop up in the middle of the screen, basically stopping everything else that was going on and alert you of this text message. And you'd have to dismiss that alert before you could really continue whatever it was you were doing on the device. But that's all different now with the Notification Center. And of course, there are many different ways you can configure it. But but by default, with most things, it just pops up a temporary floating icon letting you know that you have a message, or letting you know that something has been pushed down to your phone. And it doesn't interfere really with what you're doing. I thought maybe I would just demonstrate a little bit about how you can actually use the Notification Center with VoiceOver. And so I'll just turn my phone, unlock my phone here.
Bye to unlock.
I will
contacts.
Touch the
double tap to open
the top of the screen here up at the status bar.
7:59 p.m. Status bar item. Swipe down with 3 fingers to reveal the Notification Center. And double tap to scroll to top.
I'll swipe down with 3 fingers.
Notification College Station. Currently 64 degrees, high 73, low 46.
And the first thing in my
Tuesday,
Notification
high
Center
73.
Is my weather, and it's reading, VoiceOver is reading a weather forecast there, which is in the Notification Center.
Reminders.
there's a reminder in here.
Clear section button.
And
alert. Record the text DR. Podcast with Kevin Zhao this Tuesday, 30 a.m. ago.
That was reminding me that we were supposed to do this 30 minutes ago. We were started around that time.
Dismiss notification center button.
And then there's a button that lets you dismiss the notification center, because that's all I've got in mind right now. You can add and remove items as you choose to. It comes by default with the stocks item in there, and maybe something else. Messaging is in there. If I had a text message, it would be showing up here. But anyway, anything else you want to say about the notification center?
It's definitely one of my favorite features in iOS 5, and I really felt that the notification, how it worked pre-iOS 5, was really quite clunky and cumbersome. And just, I mean, when I was taking notes and using this in kind of various settings or just doing anything at all on my iPhone, I was like, do you really have to interrupt me and just make it so that I have to dismiss or interact with this notification? I mean, the way they've done it is quite nice and just very, very smooth. I mean, it's just far better. There's several different options. There's the banner when you receive a notification, and that's the thing you were talking about when a notification comes in, and that occurs when your iOS device is actually in use. So it pretty much, let's say you receive a text message, you would receive a banner, and that banner is displayed in the status bar, and VoiceOver would speak it, and you then have the option of hearing it, and if you wish to either ignore it, you can go ahead and do so, or if you wish to do something with it, you can touch the status bar within like the first 15 or 20 seconds that notification's there and double tap on that message in the notification center, and it'll take you straight to that app.
Yes.
And
it works great. It's very nice to be able to do that.
Oh yeah, definitely. And then I think another quite big one is from the lock screen, you have now the option of receiving, let's say you have a missed call, a voicemail, a text message, a boxcar notification, whatever. I mean, several other notifications. It can be all presented to you on the lock screen, and you can scroll through that list. You can go ahead and either swipe across or double tap on notification. It'll take you straight to that respective app, as opposed to before, where you would only receive the latest notification and everything else would be cleared out.
Yes.
But
now they all stay there until you clear them out.
Correct. And then the notification center, when you're going through it, it said it kind of broke into different sections. It had the weather thing, and it automatically placed focus on it, which I think is very nice that you don't have to kind of swipe around or touch around to find it. But also under each section, there's an option to clear it. So you don't have let's say you already know about the reminder. You can go ahead and clear that specific section, but it doesn't affect everything else, which, again, is quite nice.
Right. As a matter of fact, I'll demonstrate that.
Alert. Record the text DR. Podcast with Kevin Jowell. Clear section. Button.
I'm going to clear that out.
Double tap to confirm clear section.
And
College Station. Currently.
So now,
64 degrees. High.
All I've got is the weather.
Dismiss notification center.
There's
button.
There's a button that lets me dismiss the notification center. So I will point out that clearing this out only clears it from the notification center. The reminder is still in the reminders app, or the text message would still be in the messaging app. So it's just clearing it from this notification.
Yeah, and there's a few ways of kind of exiting the notification center. There's the way Robert demonstrated. There's also, of course, you can press the home button to go ahead and exit it, or you can touch the status bar and do a three-finger swipe up. But I think the thing that's quite powerful is that it's not set one way and you're stuck with it. But under settings notification, there's a fair amount of customization that's allowed. You can set notifications to either as a banner, which is the iOS 5 kind of way, or you can set it to as an alert, where it's like how right pre-iOS 5, where if you received a notification, it would give you that pop-up and you would have to interact with it before you can continue doing what you're doing. And there's a host of other options, really. And you can also rearrange how the notifications are ordered, as well as the two kind of things that are considered widgets are stock and weather, and you have weather enabled Actually, like myself, I also disabled the stock.
Yeah, I don't have any money to buy any stock, so hey. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of cool in a way to have the stocks there and to be able to see what was going on with the Dow Jones or the NASDAQ or with Apple. You know, I mean, that was kind of cool. I got rid of it just because I didn't really need it there. But yeah, it is beautiful that you can remove something from the center or add other things to the center. And you just go to the settings notifications section and it's all right there. And it works great with VoiceOver and it's perfectly laid out. I don't think anybody would be likely to have any problem with it.
No, not at all. I think one area that it's kind of quite nice that they made this possible is rearranging it is actually possible. And you find you kind of have to do the touch exploration where you touch on the screen, kind of slide your finger around to that specific notification. And once you find it, you do the pass through, which is the double tap and hold. And just drag either up or down, and VoiceOver will provide feedback as far as if it's before this item or that item. So it gives you feedback throughout. But one last thing as in regards to kind of a VoiceOver specific thing is under VoiceOver settings, there's an option. The very last item, it says read notifications and lock screen. So for those who have used an iPhone for a fair amount of time back to the iPhone 3GS, they would be familiar with this where if you receive a notification and your iPhone was locked, in iPhone OS 3, it would automatically read the message. But in iOS 4 and later, it's made it so it read the time only. So now you have the option between those two. You can either make it so it'll read the notification automatically or it'll just behave how it did before.
Yeah, and it's really nice. I tried it both ways with Boxcar, which is an app that pushes notifications to the phone. And I ultimately, right now, have it set to work on the lock screen, which gives you more information on that screen than VoiceOver speaks more information on that screen than it would if you had that turned off. But it actually is handy to be able to switch that around. And it might even switch it sometimes depending on how much I want to hear during the activities that whatever I'm doing during the day. So it's great to have that customizability there.
Definitely agree.
Well, I know that there are lots of new voices in iOS 5. Just we don't need to spend a lot of time on it, but tell us a little bit about what's new as far as VoiceOver voices.
The two biggest things really are you have more multilingual support. So you have things like Arabic and several other languages. So they're really kind of opening it to more users. And another thing that's quite good is more kind of regional languages, specifically kind of English ones. So now you have an Irish and a South African English option.
Yeah, it is really nice to see that multilingual support coming along. Because really, you know, access needs to be worldwide, and it's just great to see Apple pursuing it in that manner. One of my favorite things about voices is that there is now, in by default, in whatever your default language is, sort of automatically in the background, a high quality, I don't know what they call it, a premium voice. I don't know what they call it.
They're calling it, I mean, they're not officially calling it premium, but under VoiceOver settings, you have an item that says compact on or off. And in order to get this higher quality voice, you would have it ensure that such a compact off. And like Robert said, by default, it sets it off. And it's kind of interesting how that actually works. So once someone gets iOS 5 or an iPhone 4S, they're probably not going to have the premium voice right away. You would have to have a few things met, and it's similar to iCloud where you have to be connected to AC power and Wi-Fi, and it would download the premium voice silently in the background, install it, and switch to it. So don't be alarmed if you're hearing one voice on your iOS 5 device and just randomly later on you hear this voice that sounds somewhat similar, but it's different enough to catch your attention.
You definitely can tell them apart, and you'll realize, whoa, My phone has a different voice. I know you were saying somewhere that you actually prefer the compact voice, and it's great that there's a choice. People can switch between the higher quality or the compact, and whichever suits your ears best is the one you can use.
That's the one thing I really do like about, I mean, iOS 5 in many areas, it gives you all these different options and choice and flexibility. So it's really not, I mean, like most things, it's not a one size fits all. And I really do like that.
Yeah, I think it's terrific. Well, I know they've done some real enhancements with what you can do with a Bluetooth keyboard in iOS 5. And one thing that just jumped out at me, which is really kind of cool, is you can now use the numbers row on a like an Apple Bluetooth keyboard, for example, to dial the phone. And I don't believe you could do that before.
No, that's new to iOS 5, and that works in the phone app and the calculator. And one area I absolutely enjoy this is, I mean, you don't have to do this often, given that there are several kind of banking apps, but the times you have to call in either to provide a meeting ID for some sort of phone conference thing, or you're a long sort of account number or something, it's very nice to be able to use input that information using a Bluetooth keyboard.
Oh, yeah.
It actually makes it possible as opposed to, what was that? I didn't catch that.
Yeah, exactly. And I personally love the Apple Bluetooth keyboard. It's very thin and light and easy to carry around. It doesn't fold, but that doesn't bother me. I have a little sleeve I carry it in. It doesn't bother me that it doesn't fold because it's such a sturdy, easy to type on keyboard. I just really love it a lot.
I have the same exact keyboard and I believe the same sleeve as well from SFX, and I absolutely enjoy this keyboard, and it's by far the most comfortable keyboard and very sturdy. Like, and sure, it'd be an extra bonus if it folded, but in my experience, I've just looked at plenty of folding keyboards and just nothing's come close to the Apple Wireless keyboard.
Yeah, I think it's the fact that it doesn't fold that makes it so sturdy.
There are a few other things with the Bluetooth keyboard commands that they've added in iOS 5 that I also really enjoy. In any kind of web area, Safari, Mail, or if you're looking at a link, a website in, let's say, TweetList, you can use single-letter HTML navigation. So people, most screen readers users would be familiar with this, where you can press H for the next heading or B for the next button and W for the next landmark and so forth and add shift to that to go to previous. It really makes it much more effective and efficient to kind of quickly just zip around on a web page and get to exactly what you need and do whatever you're trying to do.
It's like browsing on a computer, really.
It really is. I think another thing that's quite cool is this ability to do a text string find. So VOF, and it will pop up with the dialog and ask you, what do you want to find? You can either type in a word or part of a string or whatever and press return, and it'll move focus to it and read it. And you can also do a VOG to go next and VO shift G to go previous, and that's quite nice too. I mean, these things
just lifesaver for a screen reader user when you're on a huge page like Amazon or something, to be able to have the voiceover find you that item that you just have to buy right now and go right to it. That's really a great thing.
Oh yeah, definitely.
In addition to that, there's something that I was honestly a little surprised that came to iOS 5 that's been a mainstay of VoiceOver on the Mac for a while, and that's the whole item chooser option. Do you mind telling people what that is and maybe say what you think about it?
Sure. So the item chooser is a way to display all the various items that are on the screen that VoiceOver can get focused to. So you can do this on the home screen. You can do this in Safari, and it'll just take everything on screen and present it in a vertical list that someone can scroll through, and there's also a search box that you can type in to kind of narrow down on what you're looking for and just quickly just if, I mean, again, it's back to this thing of effectively and efficiently getting around on us and navigating. So with a Bluetooth keyboard, you can press VOI and with the touchscreen, you can do a two-finger triple tap. And I think this thing's a fantastic feature.
It is. It is really a great feature, and I think something I'll use a lot. What about this new ability to label buttons? You don't have to hear button anymore if your app is not properly labeled. Apparently, you can take care of it within VoiceOver now.
I'm not so much of a fan of this feature, but I think it's great that it exists and that it's an option, so you don't have to hear button constantly. But my kind of biggest challenge with it is, how do you know what those buttons are if they're unlabeled? I mean, of course, you can ask someone to kind of describe them and so forth, but a big challenge I've seen with that is it doesn't necessarily mean that it will make those buttons functional, nor does it prevent it from, let's say, if an app later on gets updated and a button changes or the order of it changes. So there are, I mean, those are some of my concerns with this whole concept.
It's still nice to have it, but I share your concerns.
So I guess the way that works is if you, pretty much you move the VoiceOver focus to it and you press VO slash with the Bluetooth keyboard and it'll present you a dialog asking you what you want to label it as and go ahead and hit save after that. And if you're using the touchscreen, you do a two-finger double tap and hold and the same thing, input the label and go ahead and hit save. I mean, it's great that it exists, but it's kind of not the ultimate solution to kind of some apps that are less than stellar when it comes to VoiceOver accessibility.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you pointed out that with both the item chooser and the labeling buttons feature, there are both keyboard commands if you're using a Bluetooth keyboard and there are gestures if you're using the touchscreen. So it is nice, again, that Apple gave that flexibility. Well, what is this define word feature that they've made available?
So that's a general iOS 5 thing, and pretty much you now have a system-wide dictionary no matter where you are. And the way that works is you go ahead and, using the rotor or the keyboard, whichever you prefer, navigate to the word that you want, go ahead and highlight that word. If you're using the touchscreen, you go ahead and do the two-finger pinch open gesture to highlight the word, and rotor to edit, and swipe down until you get to define. Double tap on that, and you'll get the definition of whatever word you selected.
Yeah, I love that. I read tons of books, and it's always great just to be able to look a word up right on the spot like that. And so I think it's terrific that that is built into iOS 5. I was really glad to see that one come along.
Oh, likewise. I mean, myself being a student and stuff like that, I mean, I'm on doing a research project of some kind or just on the web reading an article related to whatever I'm researching. I mean, there's plenty of words that are like, what does that mean? So now I don't have to try to remember how that thing's spelled or copy and paste it and throw it into the Google search box or a dictionary app. It's all right there and just very nice and just a few taps and pinches away and there is a definition.
Yeah, I actually have a dictionary app on my phone, which I probably won't be using much anymore. I may even get rid of it. Sort of have same way with, you know, I have a weather app that I may not use that much anymore now that we have the notification center. So it is interesting that Apple's constantly giving us new ways of doing things and sort of we're having to rethink, do I still want to do some of these things the old way? And a lot of times you might, but sometimes the answer is probably not.
Yeah, I think for that, it really depends on, you have to almost do a comparison of, okay, how much of the app did I previously use and how much of the functionality does it differ? Because I think one thing that Apple does extremely well is they focus on the user experience, which I think for the most part involves really bringing it down to the bare minimum and the necessities and not kind of getting rid of the fluff and all the kind of advanced complicated stuff. So it depends on if one needs all the kind of fancy bells and whistles or not, or if they just kind of need the bare minimum.
Yeah, and if you just need the minimum, probably the app that Apple installs by default will do the job for you.
Oh, yeah.
There is one gesture that hasn't been real consistent for me, and maybe it's just because maybe the apps need to be updated, but there's now a three-finger swipe down gesture that's supposed to let you in an app that requires you to pull down something to get the app to do something. Like in TweetList, for example, it lets you, when you pull it down, it causes TweetList to refresh your Twitter feed, or in the podcast app, Downcast, it causes it to go out and refresh the podcast feeds. Well, I've been able to get that to work, I believe, in Downcast, but in TweetList, I still have to do the tap and hold and the one finger swipe down.
The part that's quite tricky with this is really trying to figure out where you're actually supposed to perform the gesture. And generally, it's going to be at the top of whatever list or content area, and in the center of the screen for the most part. At least that's been my experience. So like in TweetList, let's say if you're in your mention or your home timeline, generally would go ahead and just double tap the status bar that brings you right to the top of your tweets, and touch the kind of first or second tweet, pretty much one of the tweets at the very top, and then do the three finger swipe down. And a way to know that it took or not is if the pull down gesture worked successfully, it would say content pulled down. But if you hear something like row 1 of 10 or something, if, just give it another try and just focus on being near the top of the content area and towards the center. But when it does work, it's very nice, and compared to having to do the double tap and hold and just get the timing very precise. And if you, I mean, it's nice that there's this additional option, and that now there's actually a voiceover way of performing this pull down to refresh gesture.
Well, that's a good tip. I'll give that a try. I'll play with it a little more and see if I can get it to work in TweetList. I have seen it work a couple times, and it is nice when it does work. It seems to work especially well for me in Downcast, but maybe I just know how to hit it right.
It's funny because I actually found the reverse. I have more trouble getting it to work in Downcast, but I can get it to work all the time in TweetList.
That is funny, isn't it? There really is something to knowing how to do the gesture at the right place in a particular app, like you said.
And unfortunately with this one, it doesn't seem like there's a Bluetooth keyboard equivalent. It would logically be option down arrow with quick nav on, but that seems to perform the usual thing where it would scroll in that list or content area.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep playing with that one and see how that works out. They've made some nice changes to the calendar app and the way that it works with VoiceOver. What's that all about?
So pretty much when you're focused on the calendar, now VoiceOver will speak the current day of the week as well as a date. So in the case of today, it would say Tuesday, October 18th. As opposed to just hearing calendar.
Yeah, and so you get some immediate information.
Yeah, and that's very nice, as opposed to, okay, because the way I did that before is if I wanted a quick way to get the current day and date using my iPhone, I would have to lock my iPhone and then wake it up again and check it on the lock screen. So it's nice that it's right there on the calendar app.
Yes, that is nice. Well, in general, you know, they've just really, I don't know, this is a silly way to say it, I guess, but they've really tweaked VoiceOver. They've really, I don't know, prettied it up, you know, because not only have they made the calendar speak better, but they've set it up now so that it will tell you how many apps are in each folder as you move across the name of the folder. And they have, you know, just done a few other things, like tell you which page you're on and how many pages there are on the springboard. So, I mean, I don't know. It just feels more polished to me, more sophisticated to me somehow.
Oh, I definitely agree. I mean, it's really a combination of just making it polished, but also presenting the kind of salient and key info that you need kind of right away, as well as making it easier to kind of interact with. So like the page index, now that's an adjustable, so you can swipe up or down to go to the next or previous page. They've made moving apps on that same page to create folders and onto different pages. They've kind of really enhanced that whole experience and just made it much better as far as providing the proper feedback and proper cues and all that stuff. So, I mean, just overall with the home screen and just the whole interaction experience is much better with VoiceOver.
There's a reminders app that if you just need some basic ability to create a to-do list and have the iOS device remind you of things, it works really well with VoiceOver and especially works really nicely with the new iPhone 4S and the Siri system, which allows you to actually speak the reminders to the phone. And we're going to get into talking more about Siri and demonstrating how that works. But I suspect we're going to have to come back and do a part two, Kevin.
I believe so. One thing I want to kind of touch on with reminders is one thing that's quite powerful about it is you can set location-based reminders, what Apple calls geofencing stuff. So you can say, when I leave a location or when I get to a location, remind me of this. So not only are you doing time-based stuff, you can set location. So you can say, before I leave home, remind me to grab that package that I need to take to the post office or UPS or whatever.
I was really fantasizing a whole lot about how that would work before I saw it work. And when I saw how it actually works, it made perfect sense. What you do is you enter an address into your contacts list, and the reminder app can associate your location with that address. So when you get near that address, if it's your home address or your work address or the grocery store address, the reminder can pop up and tell you what it is you want it to remind you of. It's really very cool how it works. So Kevin, we've actually covered, I think, quite a bit of the heart, if you will, of some of the major aspects of iOS 5 and really demonstrated what it's like to use iOS 5. But there are tons of those 75 or 80 items that we haven't even touched on. Can you kind of quickly give us a little summary of what you would see as some of the highlights that we haven't touched on, or is that too much to ask at this point?
I think that should be possible. I mean, some of the other cool things are the Twitter integration. So you, within different media, so if you're looking at YouTube, Safari, Photo, there's option to tweet out. You're looking at it and you get a tweet card that has a compose window. You can type in your tweet, enable locations, and send out that tweet. And that's strictly for sharing media. There's also the whole ability with iMessage, and that thing's quite cool. So any iOS 5 device has the ability to iMessage, and that can be to an iPhone, iPad, or iPod Touch. And that really lifts the restrictions as far as carriers go and country boundaries and so forth. So that's very exciting.
Yes, it's free. It doesn't cost you anything to use iMessage across carriers or countries or any of that. So, I mean, it's just a really cool thing. It's like FaceTime for messaging. You know, it's from an iOS device to an iOS device, and it doesn't cost a penny. No more struggle with, you know, paying for all those text messages.
Yeah, and there's two things I want to kind of note there. It's actually integrated right into the message app, so there's not a separate iMessage that people have to download or look for. And as far as the different customizations that you can do, that's all done within the settings message. You can associate additional email addresses, or you can set it to
an Apple ID.
Yeah.
Or you can set it to your phone number.
And there's options to say if you want to send a read receipt or delivery status and all that stuff.
The thing that's really cool about it is that iOS 5 is smart enough to determine whether it's the person that you're messaging is another iOS device, and if so, it automatically switches to iMessage, and if not, switches to regular text messaging. You don't have to do a thing.
Yeah, and VoiceOver will indicate if it's iMessage or a text message, both in the edit field as well as when you're reviewing the conversation in specific messages. It'll say iMessage or text message.
Yes, that is very cool.
Definitely. They've improved mail as well, just in general. So now you have the option of rich text formatting. So that includes bold and kind of different level of indentation. And as far as VoiceOver goes, that's all done within the rotor itself under the edit menu. So you can either select text or you can go into the edit menu beforehand and specify if you want something to be bold, italic, and so forth. And I think that probably goes in hand with the enhancements as far as VoiceOver providing additional font information. So it will, when you first line into a text field, it'll speak if the font attributes. So it'll say something like bold 12-point Helvetica or something. And as you arrow across or you navigate by words or characters, once the font attribute changes, VoiceOver will speak it. So if it goes from 12 to 14-point bold to italic, it'll speak that information.
Yeah, VoiceOver has really matured when it comes to handling details like that in the mail app. I think you can do just about anything you want with or need to do now with mail and VoiceOver. It's really exciting.
Yeah, another thing that's quite cool as far as mail goes, they've added the ability to rearrange email addresses. So among different fields, so 2CC and BCC field, but also within these different fields. So you do a double tap and hold on a specific email address and drag it around, and VoiceOver will provide feedback throughout the entire process as far as what field it's in and where it is in a specific order, if it's before this contact or after this specific contact.
Yep, that's really nice. What else you got on your list that people would want to know about iOS 5?
I think
5?
One thing is quite cool in the camera app. They brought the ability facial recognition just in general, but this also works with VoiceOver. So you can use your camera regardless of if it's the front camera or the back-facing camera. And by default, if you don't have it pointing at a person's face, it would say zero faces. But once you have a person's face or several people's faces in focus, it would say something like one face, small, top left. And so you have an idea of where that person's face is relative to the view.
Yep.
And the goal there is to probably try to get the person's face centered and make it say something like one face, large, centered. And at that point, you can press the volume up button either on your iOS device or the remote on your earbuds to snap the picture.
So you can not only get it in focus as a VoiceOver user, but you can hold it steady because you can press a button that you can get to without moving the camera. It's a really good idea.
They've added a whole bunch of different things under VoiceOver settings, including just the streamlining the whole thing and just making it much cleaner. A bunch of things under the rotor option.
They've really enhanced that rotor.
Yeah, it's quite sophisticated. I definitely recommend just people exploring how that all works. Just in general, VoiceOver provides more feedback. And just when you're doing a whole bunch of different tasks.
Yeah, one thing I really wanted to touch on because I'm quite impressed by it is the things they've done to Braille support in VoiceOver. I was very excited when Braille support first came along because I have a HIMS product, a BrailleSense on hand, and I was able to connect it with my iPhone in iOS 4 using Bluetooth, and it worked quite well, but there were some nasty bugs and some nasty missing features that were really pretty annoying. One thing was that you couldn't stop it from contracting your Braille automatically, and so it was really hard to type things like email addresses and strings of numbers and letters and things like that. That's all changed now because you can now turn off and on the contractions for both what you type and both what's displayed on the display. And that works really well now. It's very seamless. You can use 8-dot Braille now, which makes it very nice for entering things that require perhaps a control character or an uppercase ASCII character. It's very easy to enter those now. And there was a nasty bug in iOS 4 that I was really bothered by, which was there was a conflict between the Bluetooth drivers for the Braille displays and the Wi-Fi. And when I would pair my Braille display with my phone, even if I didn't even have the Braille display turned on, it would cause Wi-Fi to just randomly disconnect, and the only way I could reconnect it was to unpair the Braille display, which was very frustrating and very annoying. Well, for me at least, that is all completely fixed in iOS 5. I've been running my Braille display paired for the last couple days, and when I walk into the house, my Wi-Fi connection connects just like I would expect it to so far every time. So I believe that bug is gone. And so, and there are other new features about that, you know, they're in the Braille system now, but those are kind of the highlights for me, and I'm really glad to see it because I think I can confidently recommend this to someone who really wants to use Braille or needs to use Braille. It's a pretty mature system now.
Yeah, it's very impressive that, I mean, for one, that they did make Braille support in iOS back a while ago. But the fact that in iOS 5, they really added a whole bunch of things, changed and fixed, and just made it work extremely well.
Yeah, I'm very happy with it. It's also very snappy with Braille, very responsive, and I don't know whether, I'm not quite sure. Okay, I kind of cheated. I have a new iPhone 4S too, and so it's hard for me to know whether the responsiveness is in part due to the phone or whether it's mostly or all just iOS 5, but it really is very quick with Braille. That makes it just lovely to use to you know, explore your Twitter timeline or to read an email or to do the various things that we do with our phones. I can sit in a meeting and do all those things perfectly silently on my Braille keyboard connected to my phone in my pocket, and no one ever knows.
Yeah, it really makes it so that it's now a viable, kind of really effective and powerful option when it comes to a full-blown Braille note-taking powerhouse device, really.
Yeah. Yeah, and they've not only, you know, beefed up the Braille support, but they've also added some pretty cool things for people with other disabilities into the whole universal access idea. And I tried out one today, which is that you can actually have each of your contacts have its own vibration pattern. You can just create a custom vibration pattern, so when the phone rings from that person, it'll vibrate a certain number of times or a certain number of long and short vibrations. And I happen to know Morse code, so my wife's name is Vicky, so I gave her a big V in Morse code, so anytime she calls, even if my phone's in silent mode, when I feel those combination of dits and dahs that make up a V, I know it's her calling. So I mean, they've really done some cool things that I certainly wouldn't have thought of.
Yeah, they now under the universal access, they have three different sections, which they really didn't break it down into sections before. But there's vision, there's hearing, and there's motor. So as well as for people with motor stuff, they can define custom gestures. They can increase or decrease the touch sensitivity or how long one has to touch for or and all that stuff. I mean, it's very, talk about universal access. They've really done it quite well.
Yes, they have. It's really great. We're about to wrap this up for this time because we've been going for a while, but is there anything that you feel like we cannot stop until we mention about iOS 5, or do you think we've covered it pretty well?
I think there's one last thing that I think people may not notice that's quite effective. Throughout iOS, there's the various things that are before were read as headings, but now system-wide under Voice over Router, there's a heading option, so you now can quickly jump among various headings, and this includes settings and mail and stuff like that. So not just HTML areas anymore. And there are several kind of things with the iPad as far as splitting and merging keyboards. You do that with a two-finger scrub. They've added a whole bunch of feedback when you do a three-finger tap to query where the VoiceOver focus is, as well as several other iPad specific kind of VoiceOver improvements, which are all very, very nice.
Yes, those are very nice. And I'm glad you mentioned those because I had kind of forgotten to mention them, but they are important. Well, I think, Kevin, really what I would like to do, if I can somehow talk you into it, I'd like us to get back together in a day or two and do what I guess I'll call a part two to iOS 5 and include in that the new iPhone 4S, because they kind of go hand in hand. They came out within days of each other, and they are a good marriage as far as I'm concerned so far. And I would like us to spend maybe another 30, 45 minutes, an hour on that combination. Would you be amenable to that?
Oh, yeah, I definitely would be. As well as I think a good thing to cover that's part of iOS 5, and it's quite significant, is Newsstand.
Yes.
This magazine and newspaper sort of collection, and kind of, I think, it's going to be, and it's shaping up to be, the kind of next generation of how people read and interact with this sort of content.
Yeah, we'll just give us a little teaser that it's great to have the Newsstand, but we got to get more publishers on board to make their content accessible. And we can certainly talk more about that.
Definitely.
All right, Kevin, well, it's been delightful having you here. I love how you can just so easily talk about these features in iOS 5. Clearly, you have devoted a fair amount of your brain power to this version of the operating system. You know it really well, and that comes across in the podcast. And thank you so much for a willingness to devote some time to this. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on, and look forward to the next time, as well as hope that everyone enjoyed the information that I was able to offer.
Yeah, and stay in touch if you want to contact us here at the Tech Doctor Podcast. You can email us at techdoctor123@gmail.com. That's techdoctor123@gmail.com. And we'll be back soon with part two of iOS 5 and iPhone 4S. So long for now.